The annual Best Places to Work in the Federal Government survey measures employees' job satisfaction. That survey every year, sponsored by the Office of Personnel Management, the Partnership for Public Service, and Deloitte Consulting. Now, when you dig into the numbers, you find something odd. Big differences between the viewpoints of rank-and-file federal employees and those in the senior executive service. Here to analyze those differences is David Dye, Director of Federal Human Capital Services at Deloitte. David, great to have you back. Good morning.
Thanks, Tom. Nice to be with you. Thank you.
All right. So tell us what you found. I mean, there's two big differences that are outlined here in the way senior executive members see the world and everybody else does.
Sure. Well, as you know, Tom, in December every year, we release the rankings, and we have opportunities throughout the year to do a deeper dive into some interesting trends or findings. I think last time we talked, we looked at the topic of innovation. This snapshot, as we call it, which is an opportunity to go diving deeper into the data, focuses on the senior executive service and comparing the SES to the rest of the federal workforce. And as you said, we found two pretty noteworthy differences. While the SES tend to have a lot of the same scores with respect to the rest of the workforce, the gaps are significant in some areas, and particularly around the topic of what we'll call performance management. Things that look at promotions, things that deal with awards, rewards and recognition, how to deal with poor performers and so forth. That's one difference. The other difference that we're finding is that training, particularly for senior executives, makes a big difference, particularly those who are new to government. So the performance management topic and the training topic are things that we're finding are notable differences.
Well, one question you point out that has the greatest variance among the two groups is promotions in my work unit are based on merit. The senior executives said yes 79% of the time. Everybody else said yes less than 30% of the time. But that's because the people answering yes a lot are the people that were promoted. And so what can we infer from that, that maybe there really is merit or maybe that there's not enough of it?
Well, I guess the way I look at it is that so these are perceptions. Hopefully perceptions have some roots in reality. But as you said, where you sit may have a large dependence on how you view the world. But I think what it says is that senior executives and the rest of the federal workforce have different experiences in their workplace and in their work environment. Obviously, senior executives have more opportunities to have influence, provide, more opportunities for decision making. So in some ways, maybe it's a little bit of a reflection of what they're doing within the organizations. But the fact that the gap is so big, as you said, sometimes 30 and 40 points on these things, makes you wonder, how do we close that gap? And I think that's really the essence of this, that while the perceptions may be very different, it's really important to make sure that we close the gap in a way that people are seeing and feeling and thinking what's going on in the workplace to a more similar degree.
You know, there's that old joke about monkeys, looking up at each other up and down a tree. And when you're at the top of the tree, you see all these wonderful faces looking up at you. And when you're at the bottom of the tree, you'll see a lot of the backsides, pointing down at you. And so I guess maybe the question is, the hard one to answer is there really merit-based principles and good performance management happening? Or is it not, and therefore, and you have to make people see it and understand it, or is it really not happening? Is it possible to find out the answer to those questions from this data?
Great question. I think the words you just used, seeing it and feeling it, I believe that's probably, well, to answer your question, there are obviously good practices occurring in government around rewarding and recognizing and promoting, people who are doing well. I will tell you in my many years of experience working in a human capital profession is that performance management is probably one of the most fundamental things to do well. It's probably one of the hardest things to get right. And so I think what these data reinforce for us is that particularly today, performance management, while it's a tough thing to do well, is that the expectations of the workforce, particularly millennials and the younger workforce, have different needs and expectations about a job, a career. And so I think the whole field of performance management is in a great state of change. And what we're finding is, in some of the examples that we provided in this snapshot, is that those agencies who are doing it well and those leaders who are understanding this changing landscape are beginning to focus away from some of the traditional ways of performance management that we all are used to, and moving more toward coaching and regular conversations and feedback. So I think what we ought to be doing is looking at how do we change the way that we do performance management.
We're speaking with David Dye, the Director of Federal Human Capital Services at Deloitte. And so, yeah, so to do a new methodology or a new technique for performance management requires, I guess, changing expectations on the part of those being mentored. But it also seems like it would invoke a lot of training requirement for the people that have to do the performance management, mainly the SESers.
Great point. And in fact, some of the examples that we cite in here, I know the Government Accountability Office, the Department of Commerce, the Department of Labor were some of the agencies that we spotlighted. And I will say that they have gotten a little bit of religion around the training aspect and reevaluating the way that they're managing their workforce. The Department of Labor one's kind of interesting because we did a comparison that you'll see in the snapshot between the overall best places to work rankings for the large agencies and departments, and then looked at the scores around the senior executives. And, you know, usually we find there's a pretty correlation between subsets of the data. In this case, Department of Labor, while they were number 10 in the overall index, they're actually number 2 on overall senior executive satisfaction. And I would credit it to a lot of the programs that they're implementing that the Secretary has instituted around training, around workshops, around mentoring, around coaching. So they've really taken this on as an opportunity through an SES training program, which is a 9-month initiative to help executives in their new roles, you know, not only learn about performance management and providing them training, but in reality, there's a lot of trust and friendships that occur through programs like this.
Yeah, and you described that training program in pretty good detail in this write-up here from the Partnership for Public Service. Workshops that featured topics like human resources, labor relations, and procurement, mentoring that paired new SES members with more experienced senior executives, and so on. And this just an unrelated story this morning, though, there is word from the CIA, according to its own website, its own blog, that the director, John Brennan, is going to initiate for all senior level officers in the CIA a training program for diversity and inclusion. And I'm wondering, you know, so clearly they see themselves as having a problem with diversity or lack of diversity in their senior ranks. And so I guess my question is, agencies vary along that path. And I imagine Labor Department is probably pretty advanced when it comes to diversity at the upper ranks. Can diversity be part of something that plays out against this whole issue of performance management and how people see their agencies?
Yeah, good question, Tom. Well, I would say diversity and inclusion, and we could spend a little more time on talking about the differences between what those are, but basically I think, you know, diversity of a workforce in terms of the demographics is one piece. Inclusion, which probably gets more at the appreciation of differences, whether they be demographic or even just differences of opinion or perspectives. So whether it's CIA or other agencies, I really think that diversity inclusion has a lot to do with how we can have leaders appreciate the uniqueness of individuals as employees in the workforce, and how do you embrace that, and how do you begin to have conversations, and how do you begin to interact? If I could just share one story with you, maybe this will be useful to your listeners. I had an opportunity to work with an agency in the last few weeks where it was a training program on things like employee engagement and connecting with the workforce. And we gave them a homework assignment in the middle of this. And we said, here are three questions that we'd like you to go out and ask three employees. Number one, what excites you most about what you do? Number two, what do you feel is the biggest barrier keeping you or your colleagues fully engaged and committed in your work? And number three, if I made one change that would have the largest impact on your engagement in this organization, what would that change be? I can't tell you how simple that sounds, but how powerful it became. And we heard stories about these leaders who said, first of all, their employees were a little surprised that they were sitting down asking these questions, but they got some great information. So, you know, whether diversity, inclusion, or connecting with people on a very personal basis, this is not hard. But we have to make it a fabric of daily life.
And so my question there is, and those are great questions, having been in management roles myself in for a long time in years past, what about managing expectations? Because unfortunately, you can't take everybody's suggestion and implement it.
Managing expectations is a big part of being a leader, right? But I would say that trust gets built, expectations get set, and accountability happens by virtue of having conversations, honest and open, transparent communication. And so I guess I view expectations as a larger, there's a larger context to that where I think you can set expectations through trust and honest communication. But, you know, so expectations about promotions, I think you can have honest conversations about that. And if people feel like there's other things they can do, what can a leader do to help somebody understand that line of sight to promotion? What does that mean? What does that look like? Are there other opportunities to get there?
And there's also, I guess, the opportunity for senior executives to, you can also offer people influence without necessarily having a promotion. They could be someone you take advice and counsel from, even if they are not at a level that would be at the circular meetings that happen every Monday morning.
Yeah, great point. It's not just, we're finding in some of our research, and we're doing some things internally in our own organization, that the frequency and the quality of conversations lead to better engaged employees, help leaders become more effective at their jobs, and the mission gets accomplished more effectively. So the performance management processes, training leaders on how to leverage some of these soft skills, be more comfortable in it, and then holding them accountable is really, I think, the essence behind these data and how do we close some of these gaps.
All right. David Dye is director of the Federal Human Capital Services Practice at Deloitte. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom. Always nice to talk with you.